Andrew Vajna present. Mickey Rourke in. An Alan Parker film. Angel Heart. Special appearance by Robert De Niro. A dingy, snow-covered back alley with steaming drain covers at night. Lisa Bonet. A man walks up the alley with a stick. Charlotte Rampling as Margaret. Original music by Trevor Jones. Edited by Jerry Hambling, ACE. Casting by Risa Braman and Billy Hopkins. Production designer, Brian Morris. A cat climbs up a fire escape and looks out into the alley, down which a dog is trotting. Director of photography, Michael Saracen. The dog sniffs about at the side of the alley and barks up at the cat. The cat runs off. The dog trots on down the alley and comes across the dead body of a man. The corpse lies on its back, its blood staining the slush around it bright red. The man's throat has been cut. The cat looks down from the fire escape and watches the dog trot away from the corpse. Executive producers Mario Casar and Andrew Vajna. Based on the novel Falling Angel by William Schwartzberg. Screenplay by Alan Parker. Produced by Alan Marshall and Elliot Kastner. Directed by Alan Parker. The screen fades to black. A car drives down a grubby city street laced with melting snow. New York, 1955. Harry, a shabby-looking white man of about 35, walks down the street blowing a bubblegum bubble. He wears a brown overcoat and smokes a cigarette.
Harry!
Harry waves to the man who called out from a shop. He passes a woman.
How are you?
A Bakelite phone rings in an office. Harry puts his coat down, sits at a desk and picks up the phone.
Hello. Yes, this is Harold Angel. Yep, middle initial R, just like in a phone book. Excuse me. Weinsepp. Herman Weinsepp. Weinsepp and McIntosh. Hold on a second.
He takes a notepad from a cluttered drawer.
Okay, Weinsepp. Weinsepp and McIntosh. Okay, I got it. Of course they know what an attorney is. Yeah, it's like a lawyer, only the bills are bigger. Sure, I'll hold. Asshole.
Harry gets himself a cigarette while he waits.
Hello, Mr. Weinsepp. Yeah, Harold Angel. I could be free. Well, would this be with your firm?
Harry pulls his glasses on.
Okay. Give me that again.
He writes, Louis Cipher.
Louis. How do you spell that? Cipher, yeah. Okay. What is it, foreign? Foreigner? If your client a foreign gentleman? Okay. Oh, Mr. Weiss, could you give me a few more details?
Harlem.
Okay. No, I know the place. Well, it's a long way up, but I can be there.
A grieving black woman is on the steps of a building in Harlem, surrounded by a small crowd of people trying to console her. As Harry walks up the street, he catches a woman's hat that's been blown by the wind and gives it back to her. He goes into the building the crowd is standing outside and goes upstairs. Harry pauses to comb his hair.
Follow me! Follow me through his gates! Yes! Oh, hallelujah! I want you to show right now how much you love God. I want you to show! It's your time! I want you to open up your hearts! And open up your wallet! And open up your purses! be talking about. I've been riding around in a Cadillac. If you love me and you want to give to me, then I should be in a Rolls Royce.
People wave money at the preacher. A middle-aged white man steps up behind Harry.
Mr. Angel?
Yeah.
Herman Weinsatt.
They shake hands.
Would you come with me, please?
Harry looks back at the hot gospel pianist, then follows after Weinsatt. They pass the doorway and Harry sees a black-clad figure scrubbing a huge bloodstain off the wall of the room beyond.
An unfortunate husband of one of Pastor John's flock took a gun to his head. Most unpleasant. Mr. Angel, please?
With a backwards glance at the bloodstained wall, Harry follows Weinsatt to a room. Weinsatt knocks on the door, and they go in. Weinsatt gestures for Harry to go on. A bearded white man with long hair tied back and immaculately manicured pointed nails sits twirling a walking stick.
Mr. Angel, allow me to introduce my client, Monsieur Louis Safer.
Hiya, Harry Angel. Pleased to meet you, Mr. Angel.
They shake hands.
I don't want to appear rude or impolite, but do you have any ID, stuff like that, before we begin?
Sure, yeah, here. Yeah. How's that?
Harry shows Cypher his gun permit. Cypher takes his time examining it. Harry glances up at the ceiling fan.
Nothing personal. It's just that I'm a little overcautious. You know how these things are.
I know. So, how did you hear about me?
Cypher glances over at Weinsatt. Harry follows his gaze.
I guess you guys just looked in the phone book, huh? Usually that's what happens, because my name is Angel, it's under A's, people are lazy, they flick through, they see the first name in a book, and...
Johnny Favorite.
Excuse me?
Do you by chance remember the name Johnny Favorite?
Remember the name Johnny? No, I don't think so.
You never knew him?
Am I supposed to know him?
He was a crooner before the war. Quite famous in his way.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Cypher, you know, I...
Mr. Cypher.
I'm sorry, baby. I'm sorry. Mr. Cyphers. I usually don't get involved in anything really heavy. I usually handle small-time stuff, insurance jobs, divorces, things of that nature. I get lucky sometimes I handle people. But I don't know, crooners or anybody famous, you know?
His real name was Liebling.
I don't know any Liebling either. So what is it that you guys want from me? Does this man owe you money or something?
Not quite. I gave Johnny some help at the beginning of his career.
So were you his agent?
No. Oh, nothing so.
Monsieur Cypher has a contract. Certain collateral was involved to be forfeited in the event of his death.
You're losing me a little bit. We're talking about a guy who's dead?
No, he was drafted. 43, North Africa. Special entertainment services. There was an attack. He was badly injured about the head and face. He had...
Amnesia, I think you call it,
Shell shock.
Shell shock, yes.
I know how that feels.
Why, were you in the services, Mr. Angel?
Yes, I was in for a short period of time, but I got a little fucked up real quick, excuse my language, you know, and they shipped me back home, and I sort of missed the whole shebang, you know, the war, the medals, all 9 yards, and I guess you could say I was lucky.
Well, Johnny wasn't so lucky. He returned home a virtual zombie.
Favorite's friends had him transferred to a private hospital upstate. There was some sort of radical psychiatric treatment involved. Favorite's lawyers had the power of attorney to...
Well, and my contract was never honored.
I see.
I don't want to sound mercenary or anything, but you must understand that my interest in Johnny is only in finding out if he's alive or if he's dead.
Receives a signed affidavit confirming that Johnny Liebling is indeed among the living. Until this last weekend when, quite by chance, Monsieur Cypher and I were in the vicinity of the hospital just outside Poughkeepsie. We decided to check for ourselves, but were given misleading information.
the runaround.
Yes, I didn't want to cause a scene. I hate to have any sort of fuss, or so I thought perhaps you could, you know, subtly in a more quiet manner.
You want me to check it out?
Check it out.
Cypher and Winesap both smile and nod.
Okay, yeah.
Harry shakes hands with Cypher.
It's funny, I have a feeling I've met you before.
I don't know, I don't think so.
Cypher shakes his hand just a little too long. It's a grey day. Harry drives a drab green sedan car along a road through open countryside.
Do you by chance remember the name Johnny Favourite?
The car passes winter crop fields and a telegraph pole.
His real name was Liebling. My interest in Johnny is only in finding out if he's alive or if he's dead.
Harry takes a left turn off the road and continues past a sign saying the Sarah Dodds Harvest Memorial Clinic. He pulls up outside a dark, forbidding building. Harry opens a suitcase and fishes out a wallet. He sifts through several fake ID cards, a press card, US customs agent, and settles on a National Institute of Health card. Harry rings a bell on a reception desk and peers through a frosted glass window.
Yes.
An attractive nurse.
May I help you?
Yes. My name is Harry Conroy, and I'm with the National Institute of Health.
He shows his ID.
Is there anyone in particular you'd like to see, Mr. Conroy?
The Institute is conducting a survey of incurable trauma cases, and I understand that you're a patient here fitting that description.
I'm afraid we can't let you see anyone without an appointment, sir.
Oh, sure, I appreciate that, but maybe, you know, you could check the files and make sure I'm on the right track. I don't want to bother anybody unnecessarily. Okay? Thank you.
What's the name of the patient?
Liebling. Jonathan Liebling.
One moment, please. That'll check.
He eyes her shapely behind as she goes.
So was you working here last weekend?
No, day off.
Did you do anything nice?
My sister's wedding.
Oh.
Well, we did have a Mr. Liebling, but it says here he was transferred.
Are you sure?
Yeah, that's what it says here.
Well, when was that?
Years ago, December 43.
May I take a look at this? Thank you.
Harry looks at the notes.
Is this recent?
It's an old file.
It's in ballpoint. You know, they weren't too big on ballpoint in 43.
Is that ballpoint?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think. They didn't have ballpoints back then?
No.
Car park outside a diner. Inside, Harry uses a payphone. He hangs up and leafs through the phone book. He draws a line under the entry for Dr. Albert Fowler, 419 Kitteridge. Harry takes a torch and a screwdriver from a bag and steps out of his car into the snow. He uses the screwdriver to pry a padlock off a door. He pushes the door open and goes down a few steps into an untidy basement. He crosses the basement and turns a light on, illuminating the stairs up into the house itself. In a bathroom, Harry turns the light on and opens a medicine cabinet. He examines a small pot of white pills, then closes the cabinet and looks at his reflection in the mirror on the door. He opens a sterilizer and finds it contains a number of syringes. He checks through a few effects on a bedside table and briefly examines a framed black and white photo of a woman. He opens a drawer and finds it contains a Bible and a Webley service revolver. He opens the gun and finds the chambers are empty. He recloses the gun and puts it back in the drawer. Checking in the fridge, he finds 8 bottles of morphine sulfate. He examines one bottle of the medicine, then puts it back. As he wanders across the kitchen, he sees Dr. Fowler coming into the house. He quickly closes the kitchen door. Fowler comes into the kitchen where Harry is sitting in the shadows. Without turning the lights on, Fowler opens the fridge door.
About time for evening fix?
Fowler looks round.
Who are you? How'd you get in here?
Through the mail slot. I'm a private detective.
Breaking and entering is a serious crime, whoever or whatever you are.
Well, hey man, call the police. Which you won't do in case they discover your little opium den you got in the icebox there.
Fowler shuts the fridge door. Harry lights a cigarette and gestures for Fowler to sit. Fowler turns the light on.
I'm a doctor. I'm perfectly entitled to keep pharmaceuticals at home.
Hey, look, Doc, tell it to somebody else, all right? We're not talking about a Band-Aid and a tuba ungatine. How long you been hooked?
What do you want of me?
Information about Johnny Liebling.
I vaguely remember treating a patient of that name many years ago.
Hey, look, Doc, I'm not fooling around here.
Harry gets up.
Either you start giving me some straight answers or I'll call the police myself. I seen the works cooking upstairs, pal, and it ain't Mr. Salt's vaccine, you know?
I remember he was an entertainer during the war. Neuro case. No chance of recovery, so we transferred him to a VA hospital in Albany.
Hey, Doc, I hate to shake you up, but I checked with Albany. He's not there. You faked the transfer.
Well, I did that quickly because he had a visitor recently, and 12 years he hadn't had a visitor.
Popular guy, huh?
Harry drinks some milk.
Where is he now?
Well, I honestly don't know.
Look, come in. Huh?
Huh? I haven't seen him since he was a patient during the war.
Look, Doc, you're in a cold sweat, huh? Look at you. Can't wait for me to leave here so you can raid the goodies in the icebox. Now, the sooner you get out with it, the sooner you can shoot yourself to Palookaville, okay? I'm gonna ask you again. Where is he?
I don't know. Some people came one night many years ago. He got in the car with them and drove away. I never saw him again.
He got into a car? I thought this guy was a vegetable.
When he first came here, he was in a coma, but he soon recovered. But he still suffered from acute amnesia.
The friends. Who were the friends?
The gentleman's name was Kelly. Edward Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
The young lady, I don't know her. She stayed in the car.
Where were they taking him?
I think down south. The man said we're taking him home.
What was the deal?
$25,000.
For what?
That was to maintain a pretense that he was still a patient in a hospital.
Well, didn't the administration suspect?
Well, why should they? I kept the charts up to date and no one asked questions when the bills get made.
Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me about Johnny Liebling. What did he look like?
I don't know. I have no idea what he looked like. His face was damaged. He had extensive facial reconstruction. He was still in bandages the day he left.
Hey, tell me about this guy, Kelly.
It's so long. I've only a vague memory. I can't remember. He was well-dressed. He had a southern accent.
What?
I truly can't remember.
All right, Doc. All right. Hey. We're going to have a little lie down, all right? I'm going to go out, and I'm going to grab a cheeseburger. Maybe a few hours cold turkey will refresh your memory, all right? Come on.
Harry picks Fowler up and helps him into the bedroom.
Oh, watch yourself. Okay, Doc, we're going to take a little nap now. Sit your ass down. I'm going to clear your mind a little bit. I'm going to go out. Maybe when I get back, I'll fix you some goodies from the icebox, all right? Listen, you tell me what I want to know, I'll be out of your hair forever.
Harry switches the light off and steps out of the bedroom, locking the door behind him. The shadow of an air conditioning fan turns lazily over one of Fowler's shoes lying on the bedroom floor. Harry walks through the slushy snow outside. He looks up as he walks along and digs his hands deep into the pockets of his overcoat.
Johnny.
He stops and looks around.
Harry.
The door to a church blows in the breeze. Just inside it sit two black nuns, their heads bowed, studying their Bibles. Harry considers for a moment, then steps into the doorway. The nuns look up from their Bibles. He sees a bowl on the floor to catch drips. The water is reddish. A concertina metal door slides open at the end of the corridor, almost inviting Harry to step inside. He turns and walks away. The nuns go back to their Bibles. In a diner, Harry stubs out a cigarette in an overflowing ashtray. He checks a soft pack of Camels and finds it's empty. He taps a key on the counter, then toys with it. The diner clerk disappears out back, leaving Harry alone in the deserted eatery. He sits at the counter, resting his head on his hand, and stares at the key. He puts the key down and sees off his cup of coffee. Back at Fowler's house, he opens the fridge and takes out one of the bottles of morphine sulfate. He heads up the stairs.
I'm back, Doc. I brought you a little something.
He unlocks the bedroom door with the key.
I think you want a cheeseburger and a shake.
He switches on the light and finds Fowler lying on the bed with his brains splashed all over the pillow. Fowler holds the Webley service revolver in his right hand. Harry walks round to the foot of the bed and sees the bullet's entry point was through Fowler's right eye. His left eye stares glassily ahead. Clutched across the dead man's chest is the framed photo of the woman. Harry lights a cigarette, striking his match on the sole of the dead man's shoe. Harry crouches beside the bed and picks up the Bible. He finds it's been hollowed out and a number of cartridges have been stashed inside it. He empties the cartridges onto the bed, then using a handkerchief, begins methodically removing his fingerprints from the scene, starting with the revolver. He wipes down the bedside cabinet and the wardrobe, then deals with the door handle. He cleans off the sterilizer and walks downstairs, wiping off the banister. He opens the front door, wiping off the door handle as he does so, and turns off the lights. Up in the bedroom, the shadow of the fan turns lazily over the discarded shoe. Day, a car pulls up on a busy New York back street as Harry crosses the road. He watches as a young woman climbs out of the car and calls over to her.
Hey, Ellie.
Hiya.
Is that your boyfriend?
She nods.
You got a car and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh.
She disappears into a building. Harry walks on down the street. He steps into a restaurant. The place is deserted, save for Mr. Cipher, who sits alone at a table sipping a cup of coffee. A plate of hard-boiled eggs is on the table beside him. He looks up as Harry makes his way towards him. Harry sits down opposite Cipher and takes a cocktail stick out of his mouth. Cipher regards him quizzically.
Did you see him?
No.
Why not?
Because it would have been difficult.
Why?
Why? Because he's not there. Your Johnny favorite walked out of Sarah Harvest Dodge 12 years ago, wearing his best suit and a new face wrapped in bandages with a headache. He took off with some guy called Kelly and a girl. You notice Kelly?
Cipher shakes his head.
Well, it seems that this guy Kelly paid off some bent doctor called Fowler to pinch hit for your guy all these years. He's been covering up for him ever since.
Cipher sips his coffee, then puts down his cup and picks up one of the hard-boiled eggs.
It looks like our Johnny has found himself a perfect disappearing act.
Seems so.
Cipher cracks the egg open.
Well, you know what they say about slugs.
No, what do they say about slugs?
They always leave slime in their tracks.
Cipher wears a large pentagram ring.
You'll find them.
No, I won't find them. Because I left out one little detail. This Dr. Fowler guy ended up dead with his fucking brains blown out all over the place, all right?
Fowler?
Yeah, Fowler.
Did you kill him?
No, I didn't kill him. But the cops might think I did.
Hmm.
Hey, look, I took on a $125 a day missing persons job with you, all right? Now I'm a murder suspect. That's it. I'm out.
Such are the hazards of your profession, Mr. Angel. If the fee bothers you, we can have it adjusted.
No, Cypher, you bother me. Listen, the closest I ever come to death is standing on the corner on 2nd Avenue watching the stiffs go by in the hearse, all right? That's the way I like it.
He waves his hand dismissively.
Are you afraid?
Yeah, I'm afraid.
I'll instruct my lawyer immediately to send you a check for $5,000. If you don't want the job, I'll engage someone else.
Harry nods as Cipher peels the egg.
$5,000.
He removes more of the shell.
You must want this, Johnny, pretty bad, huh?
I don't like messy accounts.
Harry sits back and puts the cocktail stick in his mouth.
You know, some religions think that the egg is the symbol of the soul. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Cipher pours salt on his, then blows it.
Would you like an egg?
Harry tosses a pinch of salt over his shoulder.
No, thank you. I got a thing about chickens.
Cipher takes a large and deliberate bite of his egg while keeping his eyes fixed on Harry. Harry looks rather unsettled. Later, Harry returns to the hot gospel church and walks up the stairs. He walks down a corridor and stops outside a door with a frosted glass panel. He pushes the door open and goes into the room where the man blew his brains out. He looks at the wall that had been splattered with blood, then crouches down and picks up the scrubbing brush. He tosses it into a bowl. Now he's in the room where he first met Cipher. He sits looking at the chair Cipher sat in. Harry notices a couple of doors with stained glass panels. He goes over to them and opens them. He discovers a voodoo shrine on which sits a desiccated monkey. The hot gospel preacher is carried shoulder high on a litter through the streets of Harlem. A marching band leads the procession. The preacher waves to people as they pass by. Harry looks at the shrine, which is decorated with a pair of eyeballs and an inverted cross with demonic characters around it. There is also a statue of an angel and a heart pendant. Harry closes up the shrine. The preacher's procession continues on down the street outside. Harry walks into the meeting hall where the black-clad figure sits staring at the altar. Harry walks slowly up the aisle between the chairs and reaches out to the figure's shoulder. Before he can touch it, two black men appear. One thumps him and throws him into the chairs. Harry gets up and whacks the man with a chair. The other man comes at him and kicks him. Harry thumps the man away and runs for it. The two men give chase. Harry dashes up the stairs and along a corridor. The men are still hot on his heels. Harry goes through a door and down some steps, then out through another door into a back alley. The men chase Harry over a fence. He runs on through a hole in a chain-link fence, then bounds over another couple of fences. The men keep after him. Harry rushes down another back alley and out into the road where the preacher's parade is taking place. Harry races up past the column of the preacher's followers and barges past the men carrying his litter. The men lose their balance and drop the litter, sending the preacher sprawling into the road. Harry runs on and dashes through a hole in another chain-link fence. In a bar, a young blonde woman is watching a boxing match.
146 pounds tonight, just a pound under the welterweight limit. Turner weighs 144 and a half. It's a $270,000 gate, an all-time record for the welterweight title.
Harry comes in.
It's after 11, Harry. You're late.
Sorry. Did you get it?
If I lose my job, I'll come and be your secretary.
Hey, I couldn't pay you what the Times pays. Besides, you're not going to miss it. They must be digging out stuff like this all the time. Hiya, Johnny. Where the fuck are you?
Johnny Favorite was a crooner, like you said. I didn't realize he was so big. He used to be in a band called the Spider Simpson Orchestra. They're all dead. Only Spider's here in town.
Oh, yeah? Where is he?
I wrote it all down. The dike in our Cuttings library is getting suspicious. My boss hasn't researched the story in years.
You can get the files.
Spider's in an old people's home on 138th Street.
Oh, wonderful. I get to go to Harlem again.
There was a picture of Johnny with a guy called Toot Sweet, a guitar player.
Yeah?
No one's heard of it for years. Now, here's the juicy bit. He was engaged to a rich broad named Margaret Cruzmark. Dad Ethan owns half of Louisiana. Met Johnny at a high school prom in New Orleans. Johnny shit on her and she went back home to Daddy. Oh, yeah. There's lots of her spells.
Spells?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, spells? I mean, like, I have a newt and Tova Frog, that kind of shit?
Seems she's a bit of a crackpot, casting spells at society dues and stuff. Didn't go down too well with the Ivy League stiffos. Oh, yeah. She was known as the Witch of Wellesley.
The Witch of Wellesley.
Did I do good?
Yeah, you did great. So what do I got? I got some kind of religious loony for a client. I gotta find Johnny Golden Tonsils. We don't know where he is. He probably doesn't know who he is. I got a geriatric band leader and a home in Harlem. I got a guitar player called Toot Sweet. What else I got?
A hard-on?
A flashback of a New Year celebration.
Are you okay?
A sailor kisses a nurse in the flashback. A concertina door to a stairwell is pulled back. A tower block with one window illuminated above an air conditioning unit. A nurse makes her way up the staircase. The scream emanates from the illuminated window. Now the nurse walks along a polished corridor and sits down on a chair. A fan spins. Now a reel on a tape-to-tape recorder spins. Harry is playing it in his office.
January 3rd, 1955. Client, Louis Saifier. Copy, Winesap and McIntosh. Attorneys, as reported, Johnny Favorite has not been in the Sarah Dodd Nursing Home in Poughkeepsie for the last 12 years. He was taken away by a man called Edward Kelly and a girl. The girl is unidentified. Kelly paid a Dr. Fowler $25,000 to falsify reports stating that Favorite was still at the hospital.
Harry smokes a cigarette and drops the tape machine into record.
The doctor is now deceased. Before Johnny's accident, it seemed like his career was going great till he started to dump on everyone around him. I tracked down Spider Simpson, Johnny's old band leader. Spider now resides at the Lincoln Presbyterian Hospice for the Elderly on 138th Street. Johnny also had a close buddy, a guitar player called Toots Sweet. Toots went back to Algiers. That ain't Algiers in Africa, that's Algiers in New Orleans. I think maybe Margaret went back there too, and maybe Johnny. Oh yeah, according to Spider, Johnny had a secret love. A black lady called Evangeline Proudfoot. Evangeline ran some kind of spooky store in Harlem. Oh, Mammy Carter's.
Harry stops the tape machine and rewinds the tape a little.
You don't need to know that cipher. I think secret love should stay secret.
He restarts the machine.
And the only other person who Johnny was seeing regularly was a palm reader out in Coney Island called Madame Zora.
Harry gets out of his car on Coney Island. A thick carpet of litter blows under the boardwalk, and rats sift through it for titbits. Harry pulls his coat around him against the stiff breeze and strides across the beach. He finds a man in a vest sitting in a deck chair.
Are you Izzy?
Yeah.
Looks like the last of the sun, huh?
Yep.
Hey, listen, the guy in the arcade over there told me that you might be able to help me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'm looking for a Madame Zora.
Yeah, sure, I know her. Friend of the wife before the war.
So the fortune teller, right?
Yeah, and then some. Real creepy. I hate those hocus-pocus bitches. Fucking witch. Her and a wife got along real well. The wife's a Baptist. Oh, here. Have a nose shield. Go on, take one. I found a whole box fell under the boardwalk.
You know, there's not much sun in the city right now.
Yeah, but it keeps the rain off, too.
Hey, listen, you ever hear of a Johnny favorite?
The singer?
Yeah, the crooner. Used to visit Madame Zora all the time.
I heard of him, but I don't know nothing about him. Ask the wife. She'll know. She's always singing stupid tunes off the radio. She knows all that kind of shit.
She likes the water, huh?
Nope, hates it. She's getting a little on the heavy side. She thinks it's good for a varicose vein.
All right, thanks. Listen, what do you do around here in the summertime?
I bite the heads off of rats.
What do you do in the winter?
Same.
Sporting his newly acquired nose shield, Harry wanders down to the sea, where Izzy's wife is paddling.
Excuse me!
She looks round.
I was just talking to your husband over there. I was inquiring about a Madame Zora.
Yeah, I knew her before the war. Madame Zora, you say?
Yeah, she was some kind of gypsy fortune teller.
Yeah, she used to have the booth across the boardwalk from me. She weren't no gypsy, she was a debutante. She was messing with Morton reading tea leaves.
Did you ever see her with a guy called Johnny Favorite?
Yeah, he was cute. Used to visit her all the time. She was real stuck on him. The guy with the golden tonsils, he used to call him. I knew all his tunes.
Hey, did you ever hear of a Margaret Krusemark?
Don't be a gazoony, fella. Madame Zora was Margaret Krusemark.
Well, what happened to her?
Packed up her stuff one day and closed up for good. Went back home, down south.
You have any idea where I can find Johnny Favorite?
No, maybe the cemetery. Want to hear one of his tunes? I cried for you. Now it's your turn to cry over.
Hey, thanks for the nose shield.
Okay.
I'm going to need it where I'm going.
In Brooklyn?
Louisiana.
Nice.
Harry heads off.
Where'd he go?
A train pulls into a station in Louisiana. Harry disembarks. He blows a bubblegum bubble as he walks along the platform. He stops, looking hot and bothered. He takes his jacket off and puts on his sunglasses, which still have the nose shield attached. Four black kids tap dance at the roadside as others play a selection of brass instruments. Harry wanders across the road, which is slick with rain. In his hotel room, he unpacks his case and takes out a Smith & Wesson J-frame revolver. He checks the cylinder. He puts on a jacket and dusts it down with a brush. A poster in a shop. The Red Rooster presents Toot Sweet and his band. Harry makes a note. Harry sees a flyer in a tea room's window. Madame Krusemark, tarot card, psychic reader and advisor. A tram makes its way along a street. The tram pulls up and a white woman in her 30s climbs aboard it. She's slim and has shoulder-length auburn hair. Harry watches and puffs on a cigarette as the woman takes a seat on the tram. As it pulls away, Harry ditches his cigarette and leaps aboard. Keeping his eye on the woman, he takes a seat next to a black woman, which is marked for coloured patrons only. He keeps his eyes fixed on the white woman. She pushes her hair up and rubs the back of her neck. A couple of black youths jump off the tram. The white woman gets up and disembarks as the tram stops. It's off a few seconds after the woman. He wanders over to a tree and a bit later he presses a doorbell in a cruise mark. He rings again and she's the woman he tailed on.
Mr. Angel? Be waiting. You're a little early.
Well, 4:30
Feeling.
Yes, I've been very happy.
My fortune ran before.
It usually takes me a couple of days to...
They sit down. Harry picks up.
Thank you.
Ling?
He examines the daggers.
It's been not oolong. How many people like oolong?
Madame?
None.
Sing?
Not really.
Hippo man.
So who's this,
It's my father.
In an old pirate movie. Mark, I saw any of Ethan's movies.
Vous serez... Au revoir, madame.
No, go with you. I'd prefer it if you didn't smoke.
Oh?
Now, I'm gonna need your exact date of...
He watches as she writes it.
Hey, maybe...
I don't think so. Like it.
Something your friend. You and Jeff. Huh? He... All right, look, I ain't gonna tell you the truth. I'm interested in. Probably thinking who's on the...
Is to me.
Too much about this.
Very easy.
Really would have liked to have got...
She... He looked at his ring. Harry and shakes the... his herbs on the counter.
Yeah, funny. I'm a quaint... The Conqueror wrote...
Called Evangeline, mister.
Wrote a poem. Harlem, and it was this... Evangeline Proudfoot.
She's come back. She got sick. Goodbye.
For the route. Harry goes.
A week, you say?
Sun is just coming up as Harry drives his newly acquired car along a dead straight road through open farmland. The car raises dust as it goes. Two black boys play around with the mailboxes outside some clapboard houses. Harry drives past and a couple of women sitting outside watch him go. In a graveyard, Harry stands in front of a tombstone bearing the inscription Evangeline Proudfoot, 1918, together with some face with a handkerchief. He clips the nose shield onto the sunglasses and puts them back on. Seeing a mixed-race woman approaching with a child, he quickly takes cover.
See Grandma. Who's over there? It's Grandma. Grandma.
The woman removes the old offering of bread and fruit and replaces it with a fresh one. She opens a bottle of something and rubs some of the contents on her forearms.
Let's go. Give me your hand.
She takes the child's hand and leads him out of the graveyard. As she goes, Harry creeps out from his hiding place behind a tombstone. The woman picks the child up and walks away from the graveyard. Harry follows her at a discreet distance. The woman turns a tap on in a farmyard and washes her hair under it. The child watches as she does so. Also watching from a little distance away is Harry. He dons his sunglasses and wanders into the farmyard, breaking into a run to avoid a dog. He walks up behind the woman.
Excuse me. It's Proudfoot.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, I got these from some guy in Coney Hollow, some crazy guy. Sorry.
Stop crying.
Listen, I was hoping maybe, I could talk with your mama.
Yeah? You're a little late for that. Did you know her?
No, I've never met her, but I was hoping maybe she could answer a few questions for me.
What are you, some kind of cop?
My name's Harry Angel. How are you? I'm a private detective. So what's,
Epiphany.
Epiphany?
Yeah.
Your mama left you with a very beautiful name, Epiphany.
Not much else.
Well, actually, to be quite frank, I'm looking for a friend of your mama's, guy called Johnny Favorite.
Yeah? I met all mama's friends and never met anyone called Favorite.
Oh, shit, man. I got a thing about chickens.
Yeah?
Yeah. This guy Favorite, he was friends with your mama back in New York City before the war.
Yeah, she never told me. My mama had a lot of guys. She liked men.
How about a guy named Tootsweet? He was a friend of Favorite's. Did you ever meet him?
No. Nope.
He's supposed to be a pretty good guitar player. I was going to go try to catch his act tonight.
She bites her nail.
Well, listen, I'm going to be staying here in a town, in a hotel, and I figured maybe if you could remember anything that might help me, maybe you could give me a call.
He proffers his details. After some hesitation, she takes them.
Very pretty girl, Epiphany. Your name suits you.
She smiles. He heads off, tripping over a chicken. She smiles again, and he nearly treads on another bird.
Hey, what are you after him for, Johnny Favorite?
I'm not really after him. I'm just being paid to find out where he is.
He could be 6 feet under.
Then I'll have to buy a shovel.
He puts his sunglasses on nose...
Cold thing. I had one small cup of tea. She just walked out of my life. Left them low down dirty blues with me.
Most of the punters at the venue are black. They dance, chat, and enjoy a few drinks.
It was on. Oh Lord, it was on.
Harry swigs from a bottle of beer.
It was on. Oh Lord, it was on. On a rainy day.
Harry joins in the applause as Tootsweet climbs down off the stage. He's about 60, black, and is dapperly dressed in a shirt and tie and a straw trilby. He exchanges a few pleasantries with the audience as he makes his way to the bar. Harry walks over and joins him.
Hey, that was some beautiful tune you were singing in there, Mr. Sweet.
Toot, son, thank you.
Yeah, listen, can I buy you a drink?
No, I'll get mine on the house. Two Sisters cocktails. I don't know what's in it, but I get a bigger kick out in the Deuce Exchange.
Listen, you know that I heard you play years ago in New York?
Yeah?
Yeah, it was before the war at the old Dickie Wells bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you was having it up pretty good with some cat called Johnny Favor.
Yeah, I vaguely remember playing with that guy once.
Yeah, you and him was buddies, weren't you?
No, he made a record of one of my songs, but that don't make us buddies. Say, are you a dick or book writer?
I'm neither. What I am, I'm a journalist. You see, what I'm doing is piece. The pieces on Johnny and the old Spider Simpson Orchestra.
I remember Spider. He used to play them drums like two jackrabbits fucking. Got to go, son. I ain't got much time. Just for pissing or spitting. Back to work. Say, you try one of them Two Sisters cocktails, and then you can make the whole thing up any way you want to. That's what your newspaper people usually do anyway, don't you?
Toots gets up and goes, leaving Harry disappointed. Harry follows Toots into the gents. He finds Toots puffing on a cigarette and gives an apologetic shake of his head.
Can't even take a piss.
Hey, look, pal, you know, I just wanted to have a little talk with you about Johnny Favorite and Evangeline Proud.
I'm too big to go hiding under beds. I don't know nothing. Two Sisters cocktails are the only thing I'm interested in nowadays. Fuck.
Toots steps back abruptly from something. Harry looks round to see what's bothering him. A chicken's foot voodoo charm is lying on top of the urinals. Harry picks it up by a piece of green ribbon tied to the foot.
What's going on, Toots?
Nothing. Mind your own business. I want a piss.
You don't get the hell out of here. I mean, clean out on the sidewalk. You don't wish your little white ass never was born.
Please, I gotta think about chickens.
A burly black bouncer has grabbed Harry and stuffed the chicken foot charm in his face. The bouncer hustles Harry through the club and hurls him out of the front door. Harry falls over a pile of rubbish and sprawls in the gutter. The bouncer goes back inside the club. Now in his car, Harry chucks an empty soft pack of Camels and the contents of his car's ashtray into the road. He watches as Toots comes out of the club. Toots loosens his shirt collar, walks over to his car, and gets in. Harry waits for Toots to drive away, then starts his car and follows him.
See, somebody crossed you, now your mind is gone.
Toots' car makes its way along a winding road through a light mist. Harry's car follows at a discreet distance. The cars drive on past a body of water. Somewhere in a clearing in the woods, a voodoo ceremony is taking place. People dance around a woman holding aloft two white chickens. Harry makes his way to the edge of the clearing and, taking cover behind a bush, watches the goings-on. He sees another woman has taken one of the chickens. Looking closer, he sees that the second woman is Epiphany. She dances with abandon and holds the chicken aloft. The first woman hands her a cutthroat razor. Harry watches as she slits the chicken's throat and lets its blood cascade down over her face. As she dances increasingly wildly, Harry notices that Toots is nearby playing the maracas. Still holding the now dead chicken, Epiphany kneels in front of a voodoo altar. She puts the chicken on the ground and slaps the dust, rubbing her face into it. Dirt sticks to the blood on her chin. Harry creeps away as Epiphany dances on. She sits astride one of the other dancers and thrusts her hips. Her breast falls out of her blouse. An air conditioner's fan turns sluggishly. Toots wearily makes his way up a staircase in an apartment block. The banisters cast shadows like prison bars across Toots as he climbs. He arrives at a landing and walks stiffly over to an apartment door. As he unlocks it, Harry jumps him from behind. Toots pushes him back and pulls a cutthroat razor. He slashes the back of Harry's hand with it. As he swings again, Harry rushes him, knocking him off his feet. Toots drops the blade and the pair struggle together. Harry grabs a statue of an angel off the wall and breaks it over Toots' head. He then hammers Toots into submission with a couple of heavy blows from his elbow.
Now, hey, it's the end of bullshit time, pal, okay? I got a good look at you and young Epiphany doing your hot shoe number with the chicken. And listen, I ain't up on all this voodoo shit. I'm from Brooklyn.
We ain't old Baptists down here, sonny.
What's the story with this Proudfoot girl?
She's a mambo priestess like her mom has been since she was 13.
When's the last time you saw Johnny Favorite at one of those chicken snuffers? He used to run around with my mambo, didn't he?
I told you I ain't seen him since before the war.
Hey, what about the chicken foot and the John, huh?
It means I got a big mouth.
Not big enough, Toots. What's this fucking star you are in your mouth? I'll tell you what. I'm gonna give you my hotel number and you give me a call in case you hear anything.
He writes it down.
You never know, the next time you get a special delivery chicken foot, you may need a little help. And I'll tell you, as far as I'm concerned, any dead chicken's good chicken to me.
He shoves the piece of paper with his number on it into Toots's mouth and goes. The air conditioning fan turns lazily as he makes his way down the stairs. He drops the bloodstained razor as he goes. The fan squeaks to a halt. A concertina metal door slides open. Someone approaches a glazed door. It opens, revealing Harry. His shirt is heavily bloodstained. He looks across the room. There are several pews facing an empty chair, and in the front pew sits the black-clad figure from the Hot Gospel Church. The concertina metal door slides shut behind Harry, who walks slowly towards the black-clad figure. A bloodstained cutthroat razor lies on the floor. Harry bends down and picks it up. He turns it over in his hands, the cut one of which is bleeding profusely. He drops the razor and squeezes his cut hand. A large quantity of blood drips from it. He looks at his shirt, which is also saturated with blood. He looks over at the black-clad figure. He steps towards the figure and tentatively reaches out to touch it. He wakes with a start in his hotel room and sees two white men standing over him.
The only cops with bad news don't knock.
Only private dick sleeps so late. It's quite a dream you have.
He's on my way to Mandalay again.
One of the cops kicks over a bowl to catch drips.
Shit, there's some leak you got up there.
Here. What's your name?
The fatter of the two cops hands him a piece of paper. Harry puts his glasses on and looks at it bleary-eyed.
Yeah.
At your hotel?
Well, you're standing at it, ain't you?
Your handwriting?
I think so.
Perhaps you'd like to tell us why we found that in the hand of a dead guitar player.
Harry looks surprised and takes his glasses off.
Toots Sweet is dead?
Yeah, Toots Sweet. Only this one weren't so quick, this one took time.
How did he die?
Technically, asphyxiation by his own genitalia.
Not so technically.
Somebody cut his dick off, stuffed in his mouth, and choked him to death. Then they took to redecorating his apartment with the poor jerk's blood. So when'd you see him, Angel?
Yeah, I interviewed him yesterday around 1.
Yeah, in connection with what?
A missing person.
Who?
Some cat took a walk 12 years ago. I saw Toots in an old photograph with him.
What's the name of this party you're looking for?
I'm sorry, friend. I can't say. That's right of privacy. I'm working for a New York lawyer.
Name?
Oh, come on, man. Winesap. You want his number? You want his address? Ask Tess Trueheart over there. It's in the book he's flicking through. It's under W, genius.
You know Ted Williams, the baseball player?
Yeah.
Herman Winesap.
All right, is that it, guys?
That's it. You and your right to privacy can go eat lunch. But don't stroll too far, Angel. That'll we talk to this lawyer of yours.
The fat cop heads off. Harry turns to the other one.
Hey.
The cop looks over at him.
You ever watch the Mickey Mouse Club? Because you know what today is? Today is Wednesday. Anything can happen day.
Later, Harry is back in the club he met Toots at. He walks through the bar area carrying a bottle of beer and a notepad. He goes into a phone booth and looks at the notepad, which has Margaret Kruismark RA7349 written on it. As he dials the number, a saxophonist is making a collection from patrons. Harry swigs his beer as he waits for Margaret to pick up. He looks in a mirror on the phone booth wall. A lift with a concertina door descends. Harry is in it. The RKO Palace Theatre on Broadway, 1943. Outside it, people are celebrating the new year. Men in uniform dance with women in the street. The tower block with one window illuminated above an air conditioning unit. On the street outside the theatre, people continue to celebrate. A sailor kisses a nurse. In the phone booth, Harry stares at his reflection in the mirror. Someone reaches out and taps a soldier on the shoulder. Just as he turns around, the saxophonist tugs at Harry's jacket.
Hey, man, you want a tune?
Harry stares.
Yeah, I got a tune for you.
The tap dancing boys dance on a sidewalk. Harry walks into a building off the street. He stops and looks back out at the boys. He goes back inside and makes his way up the winding staircase to Margaret Krausmark's apartment. Finding the door open, he lets himself in. Margaret lies on her back on the living room floor. Her blouse is ripped open and her entire body is covered in gore. Harry gags as he looks at her butchered remains. He looks at the pentagram necklace around her neck and her blood-splattered face. Using a handkerchief, he bends down and picks up the murder weapon. It's the dagger he was looking at when he visited last time. He tosses it aside and begins looking through the dead woman's effects. He looks at a couple of necklaces, then opens a box containing dried flowers. He picks up a jar and shakes it, then looks in another box. He opens another box and finds it contains a hand of glory, a desiccated human hand. He holds the hand up and looks at it. He tosses the hand back in the box. He leafs through Margaret's appointment book and tears out a page. He screws it up. Harry spots something and goes over for a closer look. It's Margaret's heart, which has been cut out and put on a piece of paper. He picks up the piece of paper and the heart rolls onto the desktop. A church with a porticoed walkway. A washed-out looking Harry sits alone in a bar, which has a statue of a Catholic priest in the window. Harry smokes a cigarette and sips a whiskey. A fan turns lazily above the door. Harry sees off his drink and rests the glass against his head. He leans forward and bangs his head against the bar top. A bunch of white folks are baptizing a woman in a river. She convulses ecstatically and the preacher waves his hands enthusiastically. Others attending the service are more restrained. Harry drives his car over a wooden bridge spanning the river near the baptism. He props his sunglasses up on his forehead and looks behind him. An ancient red pickup truck is following him. Harry pulls his shades down again and drives on. The vehicles make their way into a small town. Harry pulls up at the side of a dirt road and gets out. The red pickup slows behind him. Glancing back at it, he makes his way over a footbridge spanning a wide river. He waves to a couple of white guys busy cleaning shellfish.
Hey, boys.
Hi, boys.
How How's that look?
Yep, same to you. Hey, I'm getting kind of hungry. Want to sell some of those things?
Yeah. Hey, Pop.
Ah.
Got any sweet extra, por favor?
Well, any extra.
How much do you want to sell?
For 10 sous.
10 sous?
What?
10 cents a sack.
Sure, man, give me a sack.
The guys from the pickup send a pit bull after Harry. It grabs his leg. He grabs a broom and whacks the dog with it. The men with the dog are both white. One of them whacks Harry with a pickaxe handle, knocking him into a tray of crayfish, which collapses. The guy with the pickaxe handle grabs hold of Harry.
You look good, mister. Mother Cruz Marshall man wants you on that first train home.
Get that fucking thing away from me!
You don't. The dog here's gonna bite your fucking face clean off.
Fuck.
A bus pulls up on a country dirt road by some houses, and three black women get off it. Epiphany is amongst them. The bus pulls away, and Epiphany walks over to Harry, who's sitting at the side of the road in his vest, looking much the worse for wear. He smokes a cigarette.
Come to you.
Dog bit me.
Yeah, so what do you want?
Well, right now I need a laundry. That's an epiphany.
Epiphany.
Epiphany. There's something on my mind I want to ask you.
Yeah?
Yeah, the other night, you know, I saw you and Toots Sweet boogieing with the cock-a-doodle-doo out in the woods. Looked like you all were having some party.
Yeah, so what's your problem? It's a free country.
Not for chickens, it ain't.
Oh, yeah, I got a thing about chickens, I remember.
Hey, listen, Epiphany, Toots is dead.
I know, I heard.
You set him up.
No, I didn't.
You're the only one that knew I was seeing Toots.
Yeah?
Yeah. You're the one that sent the gift-wrapped chicken for two, aren't you?
Yeah, well, Tits had a big mouth.
Well, I guess he did, judging by what the cops found in it. It's quite a cute religion you people got.
Yeah, well, nailing a man to a cross ain't so cute either.
Oh, yeah, I know. You gotta kill a chicken and make the soup.
Look,
right?
We don't go around murdering people, all right, Mr. Angel? What about your Johnny favorite?
Oh, so now you remember him after all, huh?
Yeah, he was my father.
Harry looks surprised.
Mince? Vince, I'm gonna pick the baby up later, okay?
He's gonna be all right.
Hey, look, if you got anything you're holding out, now's a good time to tell.
Nothing to tell. You know, Johnny never came back from the war. Mama waited, Mama died. Sad and simple.
Epiphany, there's too many dead bodies floating around, even for Louisiana. I tell your old man to look out for you. You do have a husband.
No, no husband.
No?
Mm-mm.
Jesus, you got beautiful eyes, Epiphany. You really do. They're truly beautiful. They're the kind of eyes you can tell just what's going on inside. Right now, you're scared.
I'll manage.
She walks away.
Hey, well, listen,
Yeah, I'll call you if I hear anything.
Hey. Call me if you don't. All right?
She glances back at him, then carries on her way. Limping slightly from his encounter with the dog, Harry makes his way along a covered walkway. He turns a corner and passes his hotel reception. As he makes his way up some stairs, a woman on reception calls after him.
I have a message for you.
Harry hobbles back and she hands him a note.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
He limps away up the stairs, passing a girl holding a doll sitting on one of the steps. He touches the girl's cheek as he passes. She watches him go. A choir sings in a large church as a priest and two altar boys kneel before the altar. Harry comes into the church as another altar boy puts a Bible on a lectern and opens it. Harry walks down the central aisle of the church and goes to one of the pews at the back. Cypher is sitting in the pew behind Harry. As Harry sits down, Cypher extends his hand to him.
I'm so glad you could come.
Yeah. I didn't know you were coming to town.
I have a speaking engagement in Baton Rouge, and I thought it would be an opportune time to catch up with your progress.
Let me tell you, progress ain't too good. I found out a lot of stuff, but so far, no Johnny Favorite.
How unfortunate.
Yeah, all I got is a belly full of hocus pocus and three stiffs.
Stiffs?
Yeah. Dead bodies, Mr. Cyphere. Murders.
Murders?
Yeah. Mm. I got Fowler, Johnny's doctor, bumped himself off. I got this old voodoo guy, Toot Sweep. He got choked to death with a part of the body meant for pissing with.
This is a church, Mr. Angel.
Well, I'll tell you something. I know it's a church, but there's a lot of religion going around with this thing. It's very weird. And I don't understand it. It's ugly.
They say there's just enough religion in the world to make men hate one another, but not enough to make them love.
Oh, is that what they say? I'll tell you something, Mr. Cyphier. There wasn't too much love around for Johnny Favorite. All right, that guy was bad luck, and it's starting to rub off on me. I'm a murder suspect already in two cases. The police found my name and my address in Toot Sweet's hand.
I know, Winesap told me. You must be careful, Mr. Angel. And the third, you said there were three murders.
I checked out Johnny's old society girlfriend, Margaret Kuzmark. Do you know her?
Vaguely.
Vaguely? Hmm. Let me tell you, I'm a little fed up with fucking vaguely. Vaguely is putting a noose around my neck and I'm starting to choke, all right? So, Mr. Cypher, did you know her or not?
I knew about her, but I never actually knew her.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. She was doing my chart. I gave her Johnny's birth date, February 14th. Except someone got to her and took out their own Valentine's card. They split her open. And they cut out her heart. I guess she couldn't predict the future for herself.
The future isn't what it used to be, Mr. Angel. And your conclusions?
I haven't any. Except all I know is Johnny's running around bumping off everyone he used to know. And more it's me who's on the line for it. I'm being set up and it's scaring the shit out of me, all right? So why don't you just tell me and level with me what the fuck is going on here?
Just Johnny Favorite and the debt that's owed to me, Mr. Angel. I have old-fashioned ideas about honor. You know, an eye for an eye, things like that.
Who the fuck are you, Cypher?
Watch your language.
Hey, I don't give a fuck if this is a church, okay? Churches give me the creeps. I don't like churches.
Are you an atheist?
Yes, I am. I'm from Brooklyn.
He glances over at the priest.
I'll be in town for a day or two. Let me know what else you find, and if you need more money...
No, the money's fine. But if I ain't careful, that $5,000 you gave me could just buy me a seat on the electric chair.
Cypher regards Harry with a half smile and touches his arm reassuringly. Then goes. A bit later, Harry returns to his hotel. It's raining heavily. He strolls along a covered walkway outside the hotel rooms and tosses a cigarette away. He finds Epiphany sitting in his doorway. He sits down beside her.
Frightened eyes never lie. Come on. Come on inside. Where's your child?
He's with Mincy. She's bringing him over later. She's got 14 of her own, so he'll be okay there.
Well, look, Epiphany, you're very welcome to stay here or I'll get your room.
No, I'm okay.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to have a drink. You want a drink?
She smiles.
You can have one anyway.
He hands her a shot of whiskey.
You know, I've been thinking, Epiphany.
Yeah?
I was wondering what the hell your mama ever saw in a guy like Johnny Favorite.
I don't know. Whatever he had, he sure stole her heart away.
He uses a jug to catch drips.
To tell you the truth, I think the guy was a creep.
Oh, she sure missed him.
I mean, I tell you, what does a lady see in a guy that runs around chopping up pigeons, you know?
Well, you know what they say. It's always a badass that makes a girl's heart beat faster.
Harry nods.
she ever say anything about him?
Johnny?
Yeah.
Just two things.
You know, like what?
She once said that Johnny Favorite was as close to true evil as she ever wanted to come.
What else did she say?
He was a terrific lover.
Harry lights a cigarette.
How old are you, Epiphany?
17.
17. It's kind of young to have a kid, isn't it?
It's old enough.
So where'd the father go?
I never knew him.
I'm sorry. I'll tell you the truth. I don't know why I took this room.
It was that bamboo shame. When the spirits possess you, it's called Chevalier.
Oh, yes, I'm familiar with that. Chevalier.
Chevalier.
That's what I said, Chevalier.
Melted by the gods.
Oh, so the gods got you pregnant.
Yeah.
I understand that. Sorry.
I'm not. It's the best fuck I ever had.
Harry looks at her in surprise. She gets off the bed, flashing her smooth, tanned legs. Harry drags on his cigarette as she turns the radio on.
Come, Dick and Harry, but for me.
Wanna dance?
Here?
Yeah, here.
Harry looks around the leaking room and shrugs.
I got bit by a dog this morning. Can't move around.
Well, you won't feel a thing.
Well, I'll dance with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got a promise.
What's that?
No chickens.
Okay.
Come on, jump on.
What?
Oh. Oh.
He picks her up and they sway rhythmically together. Epiphany brushes her hair aside, then runs her fingers through Harry's hair. She gazes into his eyes. She leans in, and they kiss. They fall back onto the bed in a passionate embrace. Epiphany rolls on top of Harry. She kisses Harry tenderly on the lips. Water drips steadily into a bowl from the leaking ceiling. It also drips down onto the bed frame. Now Harry is on top of Epiphany. He kisses her as he thrusts into her. Water drips steadily from the ceiling into a jug. Harry teases Epiphany's erect nipples with his tongue as they continue to make love. He runs his tongue over her torso, and she clamps her legs around him.
The stars above.
Water pours in through a hole in the ceiling and drips down into a whiskey glass and over Harry's revolver on the bedside table. Epiphany rides Harry, arching her back. The drip bowl begins to overflow with water, and water cascades off the bedside light. As Harry continues to thrust away at Epiphany, blood begins to drip into the jug along with the rainwater. The blood and water cascades onto Harry's back, but oblivious, he and Epiphany continue humping. Blood is pouring in through a hole in the ceiling. It fills up the whiskey glass and covers Harry's revolver. A jumble of images. A woman's feet as people walk past. Someone cleaning blood from a wall. Epiphany's screaming face. Black candles on an altar, the soldier whose face is hidden, a spinning fan, someone grabs a middle-aged white man by the collar, a lift descends, flames and writhing bodies at a voodoo ceremony, blood sprays on a wall, more blood cascades into the drip bowl, Harry and Epiphany's writhing, blood-soaked bodies, Epiphany screams in pain. Harry was throttling her as he came. He rolls off her and sits on the edge of the bed. She looks over at him as she gasps for breath. He punches a mirror, breaking it. The fat one knocks on the door and peers in. He sees Epiphany sitting naked on the bed.
Should have recognized the knock.
Well, at least you had a reason for sleeping late this time. Down here, Angel, we don't mix with the jigaboos. The colored folks keep to themselves.
Well, hey, I ain't from down here.
You cut yourself?
Dog bit me.
Somebody named Margaret Krusmark figure in this missing persons case of yours?
No. Why?
She's dead. That nigga guitar player of yours, he don't matter a shit. He was into voodoo. They 86 one another 2 a week. This Krusmark dame, she comes from a Louisiana money family. White money.
So two people get bumped off in the same week. What's the connection?
Similar circumstances.
Like what? Did she get her dick cut off too?
No. Some fucker cut her heart out and needs a butcher on Decatur Street.
Hey, look, mine's a missing persons. It's not a murder, okay? Why are you telling me this?
I want to know the name of the party you're looking for.
Oh, I already told you. Call New York, talk to the lawyer.
Yeah, I did. That fancy mouthpiece gave me the same big city shit as you.
You want me to say, hey, you and Effie Clinker over there, why don't you just fuck off, leave me alone?
This ain't Jigaboo Town, asswipe! You play jump rope with Louisiana law, and I'm gonna stuff your big city smarts right up your New York ass! This Krusmark broad, she was into stargazing, black magic, all kinds of shit. They ain't nothing worse for a cop than people who get killed for nutso reasons.
He grabbed Harry's face.
Sorry if I made a mess. Maybe you can get your nigger to clean it up.
The fat cop and his slimmer partner go. Harry, who's wrapped in a towel, goes back in his room.
If I could just hold your charms again in my arms, life.
What's that tune you're singing?
You don't know it? It's one by Johnny Favorite. My mom used to sing it to me all the time.
Harry regards her uneasily.
You okay? If I can just hold your charms again in my arms, life will be complete.
Harry stares at his reflection in the broken mirror. Later, Harry walks down a street in town. The ancient red pickup truck is parked at the curbside. The men who attacked Harry are in it with their pit bull in the back. Harry goes to his car. He's about to get in when he spots the pickup truck. He marches across the street and headbutts the pickup's driver through his open window, then slams the door into the man's face. The other man leaps out of the pickup and runs off with Harry hot on his heels. A car swerves to avoid them. They run down the sidewalk and the man ducks into a building. The pickup driver drives after them. Harry runs into the building and finds himself in a stable. In one of the stalls, the man loads cartridges into a revolver. Harry picks his way through the stable and looks around. The man takes a shot at him and the bullet hits a stall. Harry takes cover and the man comes after him and takes another shot. The pickup reverses into the stables. The man takes a third shot at Harry and hits a horse which collapses on top of Harry. As he lies trapped beneath it, the driver releases the pit bull. As the dog runs towards Harry, it's kicked by a horse and keels over. Harry frees himself and runs through some doors into a shed full of chickens. He cringes. Yeah. Harry forces himself to run through the chickens and blunders out of a door at the far end of the shed. A bunch of excited white folks are watching a bearded man skinning a muskrat on a podium. Harry makes his way through the crowd. He glances up at the skinner, then wanders on, dabbing at his face with a handkerchief. Another excited crowd of white gamblers has gathered around an enclosure where a cockfight is taking place. More crowds have gathered to watch a horse race. A little distance away, Harry talks to a man who gives him directions. Harry walks in the direction indicated. He stands beside a middle-aged white man leaning on the barrier at the side of the racetrack. The horses thunder towards them.
What do you want, Mr. Angel?
I guess you already knew that.
Why should I?
Well, a couple of your morons with a matching poodle have been chasing my balls around for days. I'm looking for Johnny Favor.
As far as I know, that dance band scumbag is dead.
That dance band scumbag may be the one that killed your daughter.
Who's employing you?
Can't say.
I'll pay.
So do they. Hey, 12 years ago, you and your daughter snatched Favorite out of some nuthatch up in Poughkeepsie. You paid a junkie doctor $25,000 to pretend that Johnny was still a turnip head. He did a pretty good job until a week ago. You used the name Edward Kelly.
Angel, let's walk over here. It's a little private, and you can sample our gumbo.
You're right, I got an acid stomach. Sorry, Cajun cooking kills me.
A shed containing a vast cauldron of boiling gumbo.
It's a pity about your stomach. You'd have enjoyed our gumbo.
Krusmark leads him into the next room. Harry picks up a crab and tosses it into the boiling vat, then follows Krusmark. A man leaves them a bottle of moonshine and two glasses, then goes. Krusmark pours out the drinks as Harry locks the door, then chips away at a block of ice as they talk.
I was Edward Kelly. It was me who paid Fowler the 25 G's.
Favorite know you?
No. He acted like a sleepwalker. He just stared out the window and watched the lights go by.
Where were you taking him?
Times Square. It was New Year's Eve, 1943. Just dropped him off in the crowd, and he walked out of our lives forever. Or so we thought.
You're telling me that you paid $25,000 for a guy and you lost him in a crowd?
I did it for my daughter. It was some sort of hocus-pocus she and Johnny were fooling around with. My daughter was obsessed.
I know. I found a mummified hand in a room.
The hand of glory. It's supposed to be able to open any lock. It was the right hand of a convicted murderer, cut off while his neck was still in the noose. Or so Margaret believed.
Black magic.
Wife, what difference does it make? Margaret was always...
evil.
Evil is a dunghill, Mr. Angel. Everyone gets on his own and speaks out about someone else's. Margaret wasn't evil. She was a strange kid, though. She was into tarot cards before she could read.
Who got her started?
Some maid, a governess, who knows?
Some maid, some governess? Everything you tell me is a crock of shit. You're the one that got her started. You're the fucking devil worshipper!
The Prince of Darkness protects the powerful.
That's a crock of shit!
True, I can't help it if you don't believe.
You come straight with me, you slime bagger. I swear I'll save this state in execution.
I introduced Johnny Favor to my daughter. He was very powerful. I once watched him conjure up Lucifuge in my living room. He was in it much deeper than me. He made a pact with Satan. He sold his soul.
You expect me to swallow that?
Follow it, spit it out. I don't give a damn.
It's a crock of shit, you lying fool! Fucking motherfucker!
He sold his soul for stardom!
For stardom! Are you... That's a crutch!
Lord Satan rose from the dead.
That's a crutch!
It was magnificent! Except he thought he could outwit the Prince of Darkness. Johnny sold his soul. Then when he made it big, he tried to duck out of it.
That's a crack of shit, you
Johnny
lying.
Came across an obscure rite in an ancient manuscript. He needed a victim, someone his own age.
Why?
To steal their soul. So Toots and Johnny picked up a young soldier.
Who?
Just a boy, just a soldier out celebrating New Year's Eve in Times Square.
Who is this soldier?
They took him back to Johnny's hotel, and that's where the ceremony took place.
What ceremony?
The boy was bound naked on a rubber mat. There were complicated incantations and stuff in Latin and Greek. A pentacle was branded on his chest. Margaret handed Johnny a virgin dagger, and he sliced the boy clean open, and he ate his heart. He cut it out so quickly the heart was still beating when he wolfed it down. Johnny's plan was to drop out and resurface as a soldier. But before he could work things out, he was drafted. And then Johnny was injured, was sent home without even knowing who he was.
Who is the boy?
Only Johnny knew. He sealed the dog tags in a vase and gave it to Margaret. It was Margaret's plan to drop him off in Times Square. That would be the last place that he'd remember before it happened.
Harry runs into the loo and throws up.
He needed a victim, someone his own age.
The soldier whose face is hidden.
To steal their soul. And he sliced the boy clean open and he ate his heart.
Oh, it's the boy!
Johnny Flynn was the dropout and resurfaced as the soldier. Well, maybe he gained possession of the guy's soul. He still looked like Johnny to me.
A door slams. Harry turns around and runs out of the loo. He finds Krusemark in the next room, face down in the vat of boiling gumbo. He pulls Krusemark up. He's been boiled lobster pink. Harry drops him back in the vat and runs out of the shed. He races away across some muddy ground. It's raining heavily as Harry drives erratically back into town. He pulls up outside Margaret Krausmark's apartment. He runs up the stairs inside her block, revolver at the ready. He pulls some New Orleans Police Department tape off the door and goes into the apartment. He begins rifling through the dead woman's possessions. He goes over to a desk and pulls things off it onto the floor. He drops his gun in the process. As he rummages, he comes across the jar he found when he was last at the apartment. He picks it up and shakes it. He takes the opaque glass jar over to the sink and smashes it. He fishes a serviceman's dog tags out of the sink and looks at them with trepidation. The name on the tags is Angel, Harold. Harry takes a deep breath. Now wearing his long hair down and his nails seemingly longer and more pointed, Cypher sits in the next room listening. He watches with a half smile as Harry appears in the doorway.
Alas. How terrible is wisdom when it brings no profit to the wise, Johnny.
Louis Cypher. Lucifer. Even your name is a dime store joke.
Mephistopheles is such a mouthful in Manhattan, Johnny.
You think posing as the devil is because it scared some superstitious old guitar player and that witch and that nutty old man? You think it's gonna scare me? It ain't, because I know who I am. And you killed them. And you're trying to pin it on me. And I know who I am.
If I had cloven hooves and a pointed tail, would you be more convinced?
You're crazy. I know who I am. You're trying to frame me. You're trying to frame me. Cypher, I know who I am. You murdered them people. I never killed nobody. I didn't kill Fowler. And I didn't kill Toots. And I didn't kill Margaret. And I didn't kill Krusemark. I didn't kill no one.
I'm afraid you did, Johnny.
My name's not Johnny.
All killed by your own hand, guided by me, naturally. Frankly, you were doomed from the moment you slit that young boy in half, Johnny. For 12 years, you've been living on borrowed time and another man's memories.
Harry drops the dog tags.
Hey, I'm going to tell Winesap because he knows.
Winesap? Well, he's dead. Nasty accident. Don't worry, no one will mourn one less lawyer in the world. There's death everywhere these days, Johnny. But what gives human life its worth anyway? Because someone loves it, hates it. The flesh is weak, Johnny. Only the soul is immortal.
Harry looks round at Cypher, whose eyes glow yellow. He points at Harry.
And yours belongs to me.
Harry shakes his head.
I know who I am.
Eyes back to normal, Cypher picks up a record.
That's it, Johnny. Take a good look. However cleverly you sneak up on a mirror, your reflection always looks you straight in the eye.
I know who I am!
Cypher puts the record on the turntable and picks up the dog tags and Harry's gun. Harry has a flashback of shooting Fowler, another flashback of stabbing Margaret Krausmark. Now he sits to work on Toots with the cutthroat razor. He calmly puffs on a cigarette with a bloodstained hand. He drops Krausmark into the vat of boiling gumbo. Distraught, Harry yells at his reflection in a mirror.
I know who I am!
He stares uncertainly at his reflection, a flashback of him throttling Epiphany during sex. Harry spins around and finds Cypher is gone. He quickly searches on the floor for his revolver, but can't find it. He races out of the apartment and down the stairs. He dashes out into the pouring rain. Ignoring his car, he races off down the street. He returns to his hotel, entering by a covered walkway. As he walks along the landing to his room, he passes the black-clad figure sitting outside another room. The man, who's white, watches Harry go into his room. The fat cop is there, standing over Epiphany's blood-soaked body, which lies on the bed.
Why'd you come back?
Harry, or Johnny, looks over at Epiphany and spots a set of dog tags hanging around her neck. A tear falls from his eye.
I live here.
Who is she?
The cop looks at the tags.
Jade, Angel, Harold.
She's my daughter.
Bullshit. Who is she?
She's Epiphany Proudfoot. She stayed here for a little while.
Long enough for you to kill her, right? Unless that ain't your gun up her snatch.
Johnny looks blank. The cop's colleague comes in carrying Epiphany's little boy in his arms. Johnny stares sorrowfully at the child.
You gotta burn for this, Angel.
Johnny nods.
I know. In hell.
The little boy's eyes glow yellow and he points at Johnny. A lift descends. Johnny is in it. ITFC audio description.